Hi, my name is Glenn Mulcahy. Welcome to Love What You Play podcast. Today we'll be featuring a talk from our 2019 U Sports Fall Summit, available in full at fortheloveofthegame.ca. Our mission is to help organizations, coaches, and sports leaders develop programs to ensure kids love their game more at the end of the season than they did at the beginning. Let's all work together to make sure the kids love what they play. Thank you. Hi, this is Glenn Mulcahy, your host for Love What You Play online events and podcasts. Our next guest is someone I'm really looking forward to chat with, Sean Fitzgerald. He is currently the national senior writer for the Athletic Canada, which I'll get him to explain a little bit about that. He's a former sports writer for the Toronto Star, and has also been a writer for the National Post. You touch on it really early, the too much structure versus the lack of structure. How do we find a happy medium where we can bring more of that free play back to the games? Like, I know cross ice is going, but are we going to get there fast enough so that we can keep kids in the game?
That's a really interesting question. And I've been thinking about that a lot recently. And I know that Tom Rennie's been focused on this too in Hockey Canada. And the really interesting thing is too, is that through the reporting process of this book, and there are more than, I think, 200 interviews, easily more, I think, that went into this, is that Minor Hockey Association executives across Canada identified that this is an issue. I didn't come across anybody and have not come across anybody who said that this, what we're talking about, that we're out to lunch, that there are significant structural issues that have to be addressed. The question is, what are the solutions? And what's the implementation going to look like, especially that, you know, every minor hockey association is different. It has different issues and challenges and demographics that, you know, could be things like storage space in your local arena, you know, in a city versus a suburb. All of these things come into play and we can talk about it. But I really do think that it starts from the youngest age groups. And the idea of the initiation program, and I think taking the emphasis off the results early is a real important step. And in some parts of Scandinavia, children don't see a scoreboard for their games until they're 12 or 13 years old. And that's as much for the parents as anything. Like the kids know the score of the game. It might not be accurate, but they know if they're up 8-0 or 8-4 or 7-2 or 2-1, they know. But they get to play. They get to play on their own terms. It's not the parents who are yelling and banging on the glass. It's not the coaches who are yelling themselves hoarse about getting back in the proper defensive zone positioning. And again, as an assistant coach on a competitive level team, I'm not perfect. But that's me. I'm admitting that I'm not perfect. I try not to do that, but it's just part of it. So de-emphasizing outcomes is key. Emphasizing free play and that pond hockey mentality, which is what modified ice does so well, especially at the introduction ages, 4, 5, 6, where they're just out there and they're just able to play. And it goes up to novice when you go to half ice. You know, most associations now maybe put boards in the middle along the red line. And for the older kids, they go half ice. So red line to goal line, basically. I think emphasizing that and finding ways to move that up through the age ranks, to make it fun, and through the coaching materials, to really hammer at home that, you know, as you develop skills, there are fun ways to develop those skills to still make it seem like a game. Like, just as a quick aside, this is from some of Hockey Canada's materials, but this is a drill that I've used, honestly, for probably 3 or 4 years now. And we're in novice hockey, so they're 8 or 9. And I will report back when they start getting tired of this one. But do you remember the TV show American Gladiators?
Yeah.
From the 80s and 90s?
Yeah.
So there was a game. So American Gladiators contestants would do a whole bunch of different competitions and try and win. There was a game that was usually the end. It was sort of like, you know, The Price is Right, sort of like the showcase showdown of American Gladiators, where there was one gladiator at the barrier trying not to get hit with these tennis balls. So they duck in behind a bicycle or a barrel and try and get close enough that they could finally tap something at the end of the barrier, at the end of the race, and they win. So Hockey Canada had an idea for a game. And what it is, you know, you as a coach are standing beside the net and there are pylons. So the kids start in the far corner, and they zigzag around one pylon, zigzag around another pylon, zigzag around a fourth pylon, pick up a puck, come in around another pylon and shoot. Simple, right?
Yep.
What do? You have a bucket full of tennis balls beside you as a coach, and as the kids are zigzagging, you fire gently tennis balls at the kids. And if you hit the kid in the shin pad, the kid's out. But the kids are trying to duck and dodge. And what they learn without even knowing it is, when they duck down, maybe they're ducking down on the side, so they're using their knees and they're you know, working on their outside edges. They're working on keeping their heads up all the time on a swivel. So even when they have the puck, they don't want to get hit by the tennis ball. They're all of a sudden stick handling without looking at the puck. So you're working on things like agility, bending, recovery, inside edge, outside edge on the blades, all without them having a clue that they're working on it. But they are laughing because they're looking at kids who are getting, you know, pinged with tennis balls on the knee. They're ducking. They're celebrating when they get through. You know, they get to look at their parents' faces horrified, especially if they haven't seen this drill before, that coaches are firing. I mean, they're fully padded and you don't shoot it hard. But it's fun. They love it. And it's messy, and it's fun, and it's loud, and they're working on all of these skills, and it is so important to maintain that outlook, I believe, for as long as you can, that there's always something fun in a practice. Not everything can be fun. Power skating is a necessity, and you know what? It can kind of suck, but there's other ways to work around it and maintain in an hour-long practice, in 45, 55 minutes on the ice, that there's something they're going to be looking forward to.
Yeah, I can agree with you more. I mean, that's the way I've always coached. I've always had cheery time at the beginning, cheery time at the end. Brian, you gave a great example of the tennis ball drill, which you can call it asteroids, whatever the case may be.
That's a good one, too. And there's other ways, like they shoot the cones. And it's all in Hockey Canada's manuals. Like, Hockey Canada is, to its eternal credit, providing these examples. Yeah. It's just a matter of getting them into the hands of coaches who then understand the importance of adopting some of this stuff.
Yeah, but most of the coaches, even the 6, 7, 8-year-old kids that now are frustrated that cross ice is now part of the metric, are still thinking systems, tactics, strategies, right? Power play, penalty kill. Like, hang on a sec. You shouldn't be introducing that until way down the pipeline. Like, you should be focusing on the core skills all the way through. And we kind of touch on a couple things. Sweden is one of those Scandinavian countries that does not compete until the 13th. They focus on skill development, but the big thing, and it's in their video, that's just kind of the secrets of Swedish hockey, and if you want the link, I can send it to you. They melt their ice on April 1st until the end of August. There is no such thing as spring hockey in Sweden, but yet there's been some pretty good players that come out of there. Would you agree?
I think that's pretty fair, yeah.
Yeah, there's some pretty good players. And recently, there's one that's played for the Canucks that won the Calder Trophy last year.
Basically familiar with that work, yes.
Around on hockey, but yet they're generating. I heard a statistic, they have more players per capita in their country that made it to the NHL than any other country, which I thought was amazing.
And that's great. But I mean, for coaches and for parents, I think we have to get away from, yes, developing is important. But what are you developing for? Like, you're developing good beer league players. Like, that's what you're developing. You win a medal as a coach. You get your trophy 20 years after these kids come through your program, and you get an email back because they want a beer league trophy because, you know, their accounting firm has a team entered in the beer league and they're still playing because they love the game. That's your trophy. That's how you win as a coach or as a parent of a youth player. Making them the next Elias Pettersson or making them the next Connor McDavid, sure, maybe, whatever. You win if they have fun and they learn to love the game. And because it does. It offers so much. We've spent, a half hour talking about so much that's wrong with hockey, and there is. But the things that are right with hockey, the things that it still offers, we don't really fully appreciate, because I think if you're in the hockey bubble, you take it for granted that, you know, just as an example, last year, our little guy goes to school here. He was in grade 2. And the first day of school, there's a little kid who's wearing a Vancouver Canucks hat in class. And he's new. His family just moved here from Vancouver. So the teacher knows that our guy is nuts about hockey. So she sits this little Vancouver Canucks fan next to our little guy. Before morning recess, they have the conversation of, I like Brock Besser. I like P.K. Subban. I play for the East York Bulldogs. I'm going to play for the Tedry Thunder. Are we going to be best friends? Yes. So they have that connection. So what happens? Well, that little boy's dad is now part of my beer league hockey team. Boy has a little sister the girls get along well. They both now like, you know, hanging out and, you know, will eventually play hockey together too. That connection from all of the provinces and all of the kilometers that separated our family from their family 2 years ago have evaporated because there was a common thread of hockey. Now, might they have found each other, you know, because of their other interests without hockey? Maybe. But you know what made it really easy? Hockey brings communities together, and it repeats itself over and over and over. That I live in the most populous city in all of Canada, and because of hockey, because you meet the literal butcher, baker, candlestick maker, and you're all drinking terrible arena coffee all winter long, leaning over the railing, you meet each other, and it becomes a small town. And think of how often that plays itself out over and over and over. And imagine how much better that could be if we made this game more accessible and made it more fun and made it clear why it's so fun to all of the people who can't access it or who don't want to access the game right now.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, one of the big benefits for me when growing up with hockey, coming from Montreal, but then we started moving around the country. I was in the Northwest Territories on Frobisher. Well, I can't remember what they've changed the name to, but on Baffin Island, like way up north, and they had a hockey rink. So I got to play hockey when I was like 6 years old or 7 years old. Then I moved to Ottawa, a hockey rink. Then I go to Toronto, hockey rink. And Ottawa had Rideau Canal, then Vancouver. So I played hockey all across this country. And the one constant was the community that it basically intertwined. Now that was many years back. And where I was, it was going through the book, I'm seeing the erosion of those communities. And part of that is because of the travel focus with a lot of the, you're with an elite team, or I don't believe there's a word elite should be even used in until the kids are at the Olympics. That's just my take. But let's call it AAA, whatever you want to call it.
Sure.
But the big focus on the travel / prospect teams, that to me is what's really been the radical shift that's taken away from the community. Like even in BC, we're going to zone boundary teams and all kinds of stuff. So we've got major midget, you've got academies, you have the minor, and then you've got the zone. Like, where does the kid become a friend? Like your son and his buddy, how long is that going to last if they end up being on two separate travel teams?
No, and that's the thing. I really do think, and the really tricky thing here is, as you, if you're a minor hockey, you know, executive with some pull, is how do you address the professionalization at the grassroots level? Because that's what we're talking about here.
Thanks for joining us this week. You can find us on Facebook for Love of the Game, Twitter, TLOTG Conference, and for loveofthegame.ca. We'll see you next week for an all-new episode.